Good morning, brothers and sisters. I'm Brother Michael Bannock from Fulton, Missouri. May all the promises of Yahshua be yours. May his grace be yours in abundance. The title of my remarks today is Kosher Symbols and Other Tips. This is the last great day, September 22nd, 2019. Excuse me. Here's a rundown of the subtopics we're going to address. It looks like a lot, but I don't think it is. First, we're going to talk about faith and faithfulness. We'll talk about prime test areas in which faithfulness is expressed. We'll focus on food and drinks. Bible commands involving food and drink. Clean and unclean designations of food. We'll talk about the scope of this review. We can't talk about everything. We just can't. We're going to compare biblical kosher to rabbinic kosher. And then we're going to talk about kosher symbols, which are useful tools for helping us guide our food selections. We'll talk about sources of kosher information and a call for roundtable discussions in the future. Wouldn't it be great if we came together at the next feast and each of us was armed with important information to help us get through this age we're in? The apostles didn't have to deal with any of this. They didn't have to deal with packaged goods, processed foods, prepared foods, restaurants, cosmetics. They didn't have to deal with any of that stuff. So what's happened is this age we live in, where we are bathed with comfort and we're pampered and powdered, has all these conveniences in it. And now there's these questions hanging over it. Like, is that convenience really as good as I think it is? Let's talk about faith and faithfulness. There's a miracle of the languages that really strikes me. You're welcome to look this up. I'm not going to give you all the details. I'm just going to make the claim based on what I've verified. In Hebrew, the words for faith and faithful, faithfulness, all that, they're very closely related words. I invite you to look them up, the way they're spelled, the way they sound. In Greek, also, the words for faith and faithful and faithfulness, they too are all very closely related to each other. I consider it a miracle that Yahweh presented the good news to the Gentile world through translators who managed to capture this important point about faith, being faithful, faithfulness. I'm going to talk about areas of faithfulness in our life. Hey, what happened to my slides? What happened to my slides? Okay. I may have to inject things that fell out. I must have put the... It's okay. This version's really close to what I wanted to present, so we'll just roll with this. These are prime test areas of faithfulness in our life. One is, I talk about it a lot, courtship, betrothal, and marriage. It just amazes me. The bodies are continuing to pile up. The pain continues to go on. People think they can break Yah's laws of courtship, betrothal, and marriage, and think they can ring the cash register. They can hit the jackpot. Maybe just this once, Yahweh's laws of courtship, betrothal, and marriage won't apply to me. It's very hard for people to surrender to that. In my experience, observation, and research, when someone has all those hormones popping and firing in their bloodstream, they don't want to hear about Yahweh's laws of courtship, betrothal, and marriage. And that's why it's very wise to study that stuff before you get in the throes of something very painful and very difficult. Then there's clothing. We don't want Yahweh telling us what to wear, what not to wear, how to wear it. We don't want that. We want to express ourselves, don't we? Don't we? This just amazes me. Yahweh has lots of laws about foods. Then there's the area of money. There's the area of money. I was convicted to add this last night. This business of money. We don't want anybody telling us what to do with our money. Being faithful regarding money. I see it. When I take the totality of the scriptures, I see money as just a tool for carrying out Yah's will in my life and meeting basic needs. Some of you have been here for the first time. You might be impressed with that recreation center they built. I don't know who all the people were who sacrificed so much to pay for all that. I don't know who they are. And I carefully avoid probing that area, because maybe the people who got that started want to remain anonymous. But I know this, running that place costs a lot of money. And faithfulness includes, you know, helping pay for it when you come here. One of the office staff members explained to me that you're not just paying for a room there. You're paying for the electricity and the plumbing and the maintenance of it. There's so many areas of our life, even though I didn't mention money there, we should be faithful in sharing, paying our way. And there's one more line that's missing here. You can check this on the internet. I believe a number of major theologians have discovered that the faithful obey and the obedient believe. The obedient believe and the faithful obey. It's just amazing how that's true. People who have no regard for the commandments and all that, they find out kind of accidentally that the two go hand in hand. I know this, that if I've been a naughty boy, my prayers are hindered. If I've been a naughty boy, my faith is hindered. And so what happens is this culture we live in that points us to ease, comfort, shortcuts, and avoidance of hardship, running from trouble, this society, this culture that encourages that, it softens us up so that faithfulness doesn't seem all that important. So you think the Bible has little to say on food and drink. I mean, we have a scripture from the great apostle to the Gentiles telling us that Messiah is not found in food and drink. All right, so what's going on here? We got a lot of commands about food and drink, which you'll see in a moment. Messiah is not found in food and drink. Well, I see that as a call for balance. Right now, things are way out of balance. In our culture, anything goes. Anything goes. And having things in right proportion seems elusive these days. Adam and Eve were told what to eat and what not to eat. Lots of commandments about food and drink. Noah was told what to eat and what not to eat. Israel was told what to eat and what not to eat. On a certain day, they were required to eat the Passover. It was so important they were given a second chance to do it if they missed the first time around under certain conditions. At a certain season, we must eat only unleavened bread. On one day a year, we must not eat at all. Atonement. The Gentile converts at Antioch, look this up. They were given four primary commands. Three of those commands have to do with eating. As disciples of Yahshua, we are commanded to take the emblems. Right? Whosoever doesn't eat my body and drink my blood is not worthy of me. Bible has a lot to say about eating. It's hard to come away from this list and think, oh, anything goes. Anything goes. I forgot to mention not eating blood. I guess that's part of the Noah entry there near the top. Don't eat blood. I'll come to that later. Clean and unclean designations of food. The word kosher is in the Bible in only one place. It has nothing to do with food. It's in Esther chapter 8, verse 5. If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the things seem right before you, emphasize the word right. If the thing seems right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews which are in all the king's provinces. So Esther is saying, she's making an appeal to the king, her husband. If this thing seem, you know, if my request seems kosher before the king. It's the only time we see the word kosher in the Bible. And here's the Strong's entry. Strong's number 3787. Here it's vowel pointed to sound like, kosher. I don't think those vowel points, well, maybe it is. kosher, a primitive root properly to be straight or right, by implication to be acceptable, also to succeed or prosper. I think it should be prosper there. Direct, be right, prosper. So it may be that it appears other places in the Bible and we can't find it, but this is the best I can do. A year ago, I thought kosher was not in the Bible at all, but this is the only one I could find. But what's happened in modern use, the word kosher has been imported and applied to the approval of clean foods and other products. Please stop and think a moment, friends. I want you to start getting these terms kind of straight in your mind. There's what's kosher, which means proper, and then there's clean and unclean. For example, you're told not to eat blood. Right? The blood's not unclean. It's simply not proper to eat it. Right? If the blood of the bull was unclean, the whole bull would be unclean. Do you understand the difference? There's unclean, and then there's what's not proper. There's clean and kosher. Well, kosher includes what's clean and unclean. And it's common for us to get those mixed up. There's not a whole lot at stake in getting it mixed up, but it is better when you're formulating a strategy for life. There are foods out there which are controversial. And you can't say it's unclean, but you might be able to say it's not suitable for humans. We will not be discussing food additives. A lot of food additives are unsuitable for us. We won't be talking about most cosmetics. I'm only going to say a brief word about that in a moment. And we're not going to talk about health foods, the granola culture. You know, I think deep in our hearts, every one of us is a health nut. I really think we are. We do want to be healthy. I'll talk briefly about cosmetics because I don't want to get a whole lot into it. I'm not up here to talk about kosher foods. I'm here to talk about kosher symbols and give you some background information. As far as cosmetic goes, men, I'm going to get rough with you. Are you sure that your cologne is not delicately scented with monkey urine? Are you sure? Look up some of those ingredients. Ladies, are you putting on lipstick that is composed of pig fat and colored red dye with ground up bugs? Is that what you put on your lips? Well, you can see why I can't get into this. There's a whole lot more. By the way, if you go to the health food store, guys, I know there's colognes out there made from vegetable sources. I use them a lot, including other cosmetics for men. But I'm not a girl. Nobody's paying me to search this out. And I urge you girls to look at that stuff. What are you putting on your faces? What are you putting on your lips? I think that's a reasonable thing to request. Now, this presentation is just my take on a complex subject. I'd like you to consider this a friendly advisory. My real desire is to set you traveling in a good direction to carve out your own salvation and manage your own journey. And I haven't mentioned it in the notes anywhere, but there really is two theaters of activity going on. One is where I'm keeping kosher in my own home, and then the other is when our lives overlap. You see, when I come here and eat the food that some of you dish up, and I'm so very grateful. I'm so very grateful. Let me tap the brake here. Some of you know I like to make kosher Chinese food, you know. And I once made, when I was early in my education for this skill, I made kosher Chinese for a family in Maryland in the faith. And at a critical step, I blew it. Now, some of you who cook a lot know there's often critical breakpoint steps where if you blow it, you blow it. It's terrible. And I blew it. It was horrible. It was bad. Is there anything worse than bland? It was worse than bland. And I remember that night I got a lot of compliments on the tea. So, and from that point forward, I developed a deep and unrelenting gratitude for people who cook for me. I'm so very grateful for the things that have been dished up here. Oh, my lands, this is a foretaste of the kingdom. Yummy, great things we had here. But I'm counting on you to be faithful in presenting kosher food. I'm expecting you guys and gals to, you know, read labels, do some homework. And if you have to tune that up after today's message, that's fine. I'll forgive you, no problem. Now, when it comes to the question of kosher, it has different levels. There's what we know for sure. There's things we know with absolute certainty. This is kosher. It's clean and it's appropriate. Then there's what's probably true. There's maybe a little doubt in there, but there's what's probably true. Then there is the area of questionable foods, like these food additives and things. Some things are just plain wrong. They're just plain wrong. But the biggest barrier is not information. The biggest barrier is you and me. I'll give you an example. There's a fellow in the faith who was traveling with me. We went to a stop at one of those tollway oases around Chicago. And there was a fast food restaurant there, and he ordered some yummy French fries. You know how they make it. It's very aromatic. And, oh, you know it's going to be crunchy on the outside, soft on the inside. Smother it with salt. Bathe it in ketchup. Oh, yeah, he was ready for a feast. And I said, hey, you know, I didn't know. You see, I had been on the other side of the oasis, and I come back, and he had bought this. I said, oh, you probably don't know. This business here, they deep fry the breakfast sausages in the same grease they make the French fries. Okay, so now you've blended the unclean fats of pigs with your French fries. And I remember the poor guy, I feel sorry for him. He was so mad. He did one of those wind-up kind of things with his arm, and he threw the bag in the garbage. This illustrates what I've been saying for many years. The commandments are not hard. They really are not hard. They really aren't. They're really not hard. Jewish traditions on top of them is hard. But it's the outsiders who make it hard. It's the people who are blending clean and unclean behind our back. It's the people who are answering our questions at the restaurant, hoping that we'll hear the right word to give us the confidence to go ahead. I heard from, I think, two sources. You know, some of these stories, you save them up, you lose track of how many, but there's talk out there that the Worldwide Church of God, when they had their feasts, they would go to local restaurants ahead of time and tell them, listen, we can guarantee you a lot of business if you just tell people what's in the food and help them guide them in their choices. And later reports are that those restaurants were not faithful in what they told the customers and how they provided the food. Yeah, who can you trust? I'd like to know, what would you do if you discovered with the food in your mouth that it was unclean? Let's see a show of hands. How many people have had that happen? You put something in your mouth and go, uh-oh. Okay, it happened to me this week. I had a filling come out, and it was about time for it to be replaced. You know, it's no hardship there. I don't do silver fillings because of the mercury that comes along with them. So it was one of those alternate materials, and they don't last as long. So I got some sugar-free gum at the store this week, and because I wanted it to pull any food particles out of that jumbo cavity I have. It's a whopper cavity. Okay, there might be room for furniture in there. It's really a big cavity. So I wanted some gum to help pull that out. And I had dropped my guard. And I look at the package. It says gelatin with the gum in my mouth. Well, of course, I spit it right out. This has happened to many of us. Now, this morning, Yah was with me. I got a piece of gum from Brother Andy DeMet on the way in. And I popped it in my mouth without thinking. And there was the same motive. Let's get that cavity cleaned out, you know. And but he rapidly showed me that the bag had a symbol on it that gave me a lot of comfort. And maybe a little later I'll ask Randy to loan me that bag so I can show you. But the real barrier is you. Are you willing to spit out that unclean thing, no matter how yummy it is? If you find out, uh-oh, this is too good, are you willing to remove it immediately? And are you willing to do it in a way that doesn't disrupt others? If I was at a restaurant and something like that happened, could I find the grace to discreetly go into the bathroom and take care of that? I wouldn't want to project my weaknesses on yours, but my biggest barrier is, that looks awful yummy. Am I willing to brush it aside? What about you? Here's what we know for sure. Raw plant foods are kosher. Example, in this photo, in this rendering here, everything there is kosher. Watermelon, green pepper, tomato, banana, fruits. You know, there's no questions there. The only question you might have is if you don't rinse it, there might be bugs residing in it somewhere. Broccoli, for example, is something you got to be careful about. All right, little beady bugs. And you might someday see a picture of a kosher certifying rabbi, a Jewish rabbi, with a one of those magnifying glasses on, inspecting vegetables for bugs. But that's the only thing. This is right from Yahweh. But from this point forward, we have diminishing levels of assurance. On this slide, you see an image of Kashrus magazine. I've subscribed to it twice, on and off. It is, it's kind of troubling. They have lots of cool articles on maintaining kosher in the Jewish community. But every issue has a nice thick section, a whistleblower section, where it lists companies who falsely put kosher symbols on the food. False kosher labels. They name names. In some cases, it's a court case. In some cases, it's a letter from a lawyer to them, from Kashrus to the offender, saying, cease and desist. That ain't kosher anymore, or it never was kosher. What are you putting that symbol on that thing for? There's no rabbi overseeing your facility. No Jewish rabbi. If you listen, gang, if you take all my rabbis, and line them up against the wall and count them, I got one rabbi. Same as you. So when I use the word rabbi, I mean Jewish rabbi in this context. So that right there, this is the leading magazine for those who are interested in a kosher lifestyle. And even they're admitting in the earliest pages of each issue, long lists of people who are breaking the rules. So that's why I'm saying these symbols are not 100%. They're close to 100%. With these typical certification agencies certify many thousands of food items as kosher. And so it is really true, 99.9%, I'm speaking rhetorically, of those things labeled kosher, they're kosher. But I want you to see, here's an example of one. At the top of the issue, they have a blue band with some of the lead articles inside, and I've underlined and read one of them. Norwegian Cruise Line kosher scandals in the UK, specifically Liverpool and Manchester, and Austria, Belgium, and Hungary. People running around putting kosher, claiming something's kosher on these cruise lines, and it wasn't kosher. Why would they lie? Why would they lie? Well, it turns out getting kosher certification from a Jewish rabbi costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of dough, and those foods cost more themselves. Now, there's some ordinary items around here. You can see them in our own pantry here that are made in such great quantities that the cost of kosher certification is a teeny, weeny, weeny fraction of it. But there's other foods for which kosher certification comes with a heavy surcharge. So people who are doing cruise lines for Jewish tourists, you know, they can benefit economically if they put non-kosher food out and say it is kosher. With the knowledge that no label is always 100% correct, we will review kosher food symbols with appropriate caution. Now, here's why I'm doing this. I had discovered that a number of new people in the fellowship don't know about kosher symbols on food packaging. And it was a pleasure. One of the newer sisters went through the pantry with me, and I showed her all the different symbols. And this is actually an experience I've had many times. So I thought, you know, here on the last great day where we've all had a good time and lots of swell memories, I'm going to lay off of high doctrine today, and I'm going to talk about something we can all, like, share and research together. Biblical kosher compared to rabbinic kosher. Let's get this straight. Biblical kosher speaks strictly to biblical dietary laws, such as clean meats and no eating of blood. rabbinic kosher certification includes all that, biblical kosher assurance, but it also requires that a rabbi confirm conformance to extra rabbinic rules. For example, no mixing of meat and milk. We don't have to follow that. Abraham didn't follow that. Okay, there's no reason for us to avoid meat and milk. Now, just to let you know, if you ever dish up dinner for me, you know I'm going to be very grateful. But meat suspended in cheese sauce, I don't like it. I just don't like it. There's no telling what I'll do if you put that in front of me. I'd rather you not do that. But my deselection of that has nothing to do with kosher, a Jewish rabbi rules. Here's another one. This is a rabbinic rule about Passover. You would never in a million years imagine this, but they do. You know, at Passover, they don't want anything with leavening in the house during that whole week. Neither do we. Well, they have a rule that says real kosher for Passover matzos cannot be exposed to the air more than a certain number of minutes. I forget the time. Maybe it's 15 or 20 minutes. I don't know. But they have to certify the matzos here that we're presenting to you were not exposed to the air more than a certain amount of time because you don't want yeast in the air to get on it. They don't even want that in there. Now, they know there's going to be some. Scientifically, we know there's always going to be some landing there. But is it enough to affect what you have in front of you? Well, they have rules for that. Now, get this. I'll bet all of us here have used a roll of paper towels. And you notice how the last towel on the roll is kind of sticky on the tube? You have to kind of pull extra hard to get it off because it looks like it's glued there. Okay. A lot of these paper towel manufacturers use flour and water to make that paste. I made flour and water paste when I was in kindergarten. I don't know about you, but it really is sticky stuff. Well, according to these kosher Jewish rabbi certification rules, certain rabbis say that's bad for Passover because they don't know how long that flour water glue was sitting there in the open air. You would never think of that, but they thought of it. Okay, that's what they're into. That stuff exceeds our concerns. I can't imagine anybody saying, I want some leavening. Let me rip all the paper towels off that roll and dip the tube in my bread. But that stuff is beyond what we need. But maybe that's a good thing. Rabbinic kosher means that it exceeds our requirements. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a nuisance to have to live by such rules. I'm glad I don't have to, but they do. And so they do all this work for us in the course of fulfilling their targets. And that's a good thing to know. But if that kosher symbol is true, they've done a lot of homework for us. Think about it. What would it cost each of us individually to get on airplanes and visit all these factories and go there regularly and supervise them? It would be such a redundant waste of time and effort. But here's somebody who's highly motivated to do it. And they are usually right. I'll put it to you this way. If I was to go inspect a factory, I think the Jewish rabbi would be right more often than me. Yeah. Well, here we go. We're going to look at some kosher symbols and see if we can draw from them. You know, I just would like you to know about some of the big ones that are out there. And you can start looking for them. It's really funny to show somebody this the first time. And I remember very recently I bumped into one of the brethren at a supermarket, and I had the pleasure of showing them this many of these symbols. Here's Bragg's Organic Apple Cider Vinegar. And in the lower right-hand corner of the image, you see the letters KSA, and it says kosher right underneath it. Now, the letters KSA kind of look like Hebrew letters with that wavy style. So I did a little close-up there to make it clear. I think that stands for Kosher Supervision of America or something like that. Here's another one, Tabasco sauce. Now, this is one has a symbol that doesn't carry a lot of weight. It's simply the letter K. Now, when manufacturers do that, it's a self-certification. They themselves say, we looked up the rules, we're saying it's kosher. When I see that, I immediately read the ingredients. Because if you don't have a kosher symbol, you have to read the ingredients, right? And I look at the ingredients, I say, yeah, that looks pretty good to me. I don't see anything dangerous there. So I know there's some risk here, but it seems reasonable to rely on that listing they have there. So that little K all by itself doesn't mean a whole lot. To me, it means we've looked at the rules. We're going to put a K on there anyway. Here's a box of salt that I got in one of my cabinets. And there's the OU symbol. That's the Union of Orthodox Rabbis. There are lots of kosher certification agencies in this country. In fact, when I looked this up in preparation for today, I was shocked at how many new and growing companies there are out there. It's really vast in scope. Frankly, I don't know how salt could be non-kosher, but yeah, that'd be like putting on a box of salt, fat-free, right? What's that thing in wheat that we can't have? What's that thing in gluten? Yeah, gluten-free on a salt box. I mean, come on. But they did put iodine in there, and it may be that the process of putting iodine in there raises a question. The OU certification has long been one of the very highest and best certifications you can find. Here's an OU on a bottle of Thousand Island dressing. So, yeah, I gravitate to that. Bingo. Ken's products for dressings, I don't think I've ever found one without an OU. So you grab that. The one with cheese may be a question. We'll have to see if they put an OU on there. But that means a Jewish rabbi has flown in there, inspected the facility, asked a lot of questions, and he goes there frequently. So even on the ingredient label, I guess they wanted to make absolutely sure you got that OU there. On the ingredient label, on the flip side of that bottle, we still have the OU right next to the ingredient list. Now, by the way, if it's OU and you look at the ingredient list, let's look at the second line from the bottom. You find something like xanthan gum. That's a tip-off that xanthan gum can be kosher. I'm not saying it always is. I'm just saying that this is evidence that xanthan gum can be kosher. Propylene glycol. I don't know if that's too good for me, but it's kosher. Alginate and other things in that list. There's something in the middle I had failed to highlight. In, let's say, the line in the middle, it says natural flavor. That's something I watch out for. I mean, what is natural flavor? Pig's eyeballs? What? That's natural. It's natural. Worms? How about worms? Worms? That's natural, right? So natural flavor, it doesn't impress me. But that OU in the upper right-hand corner, that seals the deal. This one's tricky. I wanted you to be aware of tricky labels where the symbol's there, but you can't see it. This is like those quiz shows used to be on TV where they embed a picture in a bigger picture. Well, you have to look. Other times, I've looked at labels and said, I think it's here. And it's only after several times rotating it around, and look, I finally find it. But there it is buried in the lower right-hand corner of that same label. So you can see what all that salads, what is that stuff? Yeah, it's a salad dressing. All that salad stuff is just sort of lost. But there it is. Here's that circle K on a bottle of La Choy soy sauce. I think here is where I begin to give you web pages, www.ok.org. That's a pretty high-rated symbol, the circle K or the OK. Pretty strong commitments on their part. I just turned the label over to show that there's not a whole lot in there to worry about anyway. When I see such symbols, I grab it and go. Grab it and go. I don't worry about the label. But there are times when I look at it and I wonder, gee, that looks too bright. The color's too red or too yellow. And I'll take a look at what colored it. Black tea. I don't know how you can ruin black tea, but just to be a little more comprehensive, I showed an OU on a box of discount black tea from a store. There's an OU on it. Oh, yeah, we can blame Mike Daly for this. He turned me on to the sriracha hot chili sauce. I love this stuff, Mike. But there's a kosher symbol there. You know, this one's from the Rabbinic Council of California, RCC. There's a K there for kosher, and the letters RCC. That's a kosher symbol. Here's an economical bag of corn chips. Lower right-hand corner is a Triangle K. And they have a webpage you can go to, trianglek.org. Yes, sir, I just grab it and go. Red Hot Blues corn chips. I actually prefer corn chips that have color in them. This is a kind of a premium product you'll find at the health food store from the Garden of Eden. In the lower left-hand corner, you have the Hebrew letter Kof. Now, I see now that Hebrew class paid off. You got the Hebrew letter Kof, which stands for kosher. But let's take a look at that little thing underneath the Kof. Oh, by the way, for those listening in online or audio outreach, that's www.kof-k.org. That would look like kof-k.org. But underneath there's the letters P-A-R-V-E, parve, and that means that there's no animal ingredients in it at all. And that's a really great thing. If you know what parve means, and you just want no questions at all about animal ingredients, bingo, there it is. I'm not endorsing this vitamin product. I just happened to grab this when I was running low on vitamin E, and I grabbed something that might fill in. It turns out this product is not quite what I want, but you notice I was careful to buy one that was kosher. See the star K. The webpage for this outfit, www.star-k.org. And by the way, notice that the capsules are vegetarian. A lot of the capsules in these health foods are made from questionable sources or objectionable sources. And at the health food stores where I go, they got used to me now. They see me coming, and I've trained them. Oh, yeah, you're the guy who wants the capsule to be either bovine, you know, beef gelatin capsule, or vegetarian. I say, yeah. And they know by now what I'm looking for. I find a lot of places I go, I have to train the people who are serving me. At some of the restaurants I used to frequent in Chicago, they knew what I wanted every time because I'd find one dish I knew was good and I'd order the same thing all the time. Pressing on, I'm raising a flag here. As of late, I've become concerned about vegetarian. Let me explain. Vegetarian ratings, notice it's not a kosher symbol, but to be comprehensive, it says vegetarian, and my first impulse is to say, oh, that's got to be clean. Well, wait a minute. Vegetarian allows inclusion of dairy and eggs. Question, what eggs? Question, what dairy? What eggs? Could be anything. Could be ostriches. You know, we don't know. Could be penguins. Who knows what it is? So, vegetarian at this moment, I'm having doubts about this. Now, maybe I'm supposed to come up here and be real firm about everything, but I think this subject is so complex. And we're not operating right now in the Bible. We're operating in what men do. We're figuring out what others are doing. And I think I should share with you the flag I've raised on vegetarian. Well, I'm going to take a closer look at some of these products. Now, this happens to be something in a shelf at my office, which was a backup. It turns out, I don't know how many of you take supplements like I do. I'm very careful about what I buy, and they're all targeted for a certain reason. But I wonder if any of you have ever bought a bottle of supplements, and you open it up, and the pill is too big. You know, and I tell them, you know, man, a lot of the people buying this stuff are like in retirement or pre-retirement, and you give them a horse pill and they can't swallow it. You know, this doesn't add up. You've seen that. I got a grinder to grind some of the big ones down to powder, maybe put on applesauce. Some of these pills are so big they won't fit in the grinder. But you believe that. Okay. I know that's a little off topic, but We have reason to believe our soils have been depleted. Early in the 20th century, somebody wrote a real good book about this. I don't have it handy. But this guy predicted, America, you're depleting your soils, and you're going to get clobbered for it. And, well, that's one of the reasons I do supplements. I think I can get everything I need from food if I could just get my diet straightened out, you know? Oh, yeah, the product you see there, alpha lipoic acid, it's considered the queen, the king or queen of antioxidants. The vegetarian now has questions, but here's acetyl L-carnitine. This I found in a book about longevity. And there, a close-up, it has vegetarian slash vegan for the formula. They're saying, look, this is suitable for vegetarians and vegans. Vegan allows nothing from animals, no eggs, no dairy, nothing. They're not even on the stage. So even though that's not a kosher symbol, vegan does the job. Vegan does the trick. Maybe this is a good time now to ask my friend Randy to bring that bag of gum up. Oh, Aiden will do it. Thank you. Could you please? Hallelujah. You know, Yahweh keeps talking to me right up to the time I give the sermon. I know they can't see it online, but this bag of pure gum, and I got all these symbols at the bottom, peanut-free, non-GMO, I'll vote for that, gluten-free, all right, and finally, vegan in the lower right-hand corner, so I'll hold it up in case there's a video on it. You see that big V there? I like that. Let me just guess, I wonder if there's chicle in here. Let me just take a look if there's chicle in here. Oh, it just says gum base. You ever heard of chiclets? Gum comes from the chicle tree. That's where the word chiclets comes from. Aiden, can you take this now so we don't forget? Dad might need it later. Okay. Oh, yeah, kosher symbols. Here's my favorite bread, Dave's Killer Bread. How many people have plugged into this product? Oh, man, isn't it amazing? It's like a gift from heaven. I just know I'm eating something that's meant to be. But boy, is it pricey. Huh? They're ringing the cash register, aren't they? This particular one has 21 whole grains and seeds. When I see a bread like this, I think, oh, it's too good to be true. Then you look at that giant ingredient list. Like, man, I'm in the store. I'm sleep deprived. I can't seem to focus on all those funny letters. Maybe I should bring a magnifying glass to the produce market, you know. But there he's got that jumbo OU symbol there, that jumbo kosher symbol. Hey, I don't have to read that ingredient label, and I just throw it in the basket. Oh, there's the webpage for OU Kosher. That's oukosher.org. Here's a pancake mix I like. No kosher symbol, so I go by the ingredient list. It looks okay to me. It looks okay. I could be wrong. I might come back to you next year and say, I called them and I found out that the sodium acid pyrophosphate comes from whale blubber. You know, maybe we'll find that out. So they seem pretty forthcoming. If somebody wants to start looking these things up, you know, we might have a roundtable discussion or maybe even a workshop on it. Here's one of my favorite cereals, Grape Nuts. I should enjoy this crunchy cereal before I lose all my teeth. There's an OU on the lower left-hand corner of the cereal box. That's very common. Go to the cereal line in any of the major supermarkets. It just one after another's got the OU on it or something like that. Now, I didn't manage to pull one in, but for the longest time, Frosted Mini Wheats had gelatin in it. Anybody have a update on it? Okay, we're going to talk about gelatin in a moment. The foods that got gelatin, I can't nix it off. We're almost done. You're going to have a short sermon today. But here's a nut butter, a peanut butter from the health food store in the lower right-hand. I missed it in the markup. In the lower right-hand corner, there's a circle V, and it says Pariv there. Pariv means that There's nothing from animals in it. The V, I don't know what that means. It could, but first thing that comes to mind is vegan, but I don't know of any Jewish rabbis running around certifying things as vegan. So I was wrong on this slide. I said no kosher symbol, but the ingredient list looks okay. So if we zoom in on the ingredient list, we find it only has roasted peanuts. How can you mess that up? You know, how can you mess up roasted peanuts? So it's almost a trivial matter to say it's pariv. There's something to be aware of on fish. About a year ago, a report came out said that fish species are among the most mislabeled things in the food agency. Oh, and suddenly I've become very cautious about the fish I eat. Really worried about that. And fish from China is unwelcome in my home. Terrible reports of them raising fish in what we would call raw sewage. They're counting on the body of the fish to clean out the raw sewage. I don't want anything from China. I don't want any food from China. In the lower right-hand corner, it says wild-caught Alaska pollock, a pollock or something like that. And I want wild-caught. I don't want it from a fishery. If it's in a fishery, it's clean. It'll be clean. But in the fishery, they don't get the diet that Yahweh ordained. But is this kosher? And some of these symbols are hard to find. If you look on the left-hand side, you see kind of a pinkish blur of letters. So I zoom in, and it's the tablet K kosher symbol. Now, the D next to a kosher symbol means there's dairy in there. Our Jewish friends are very worried about that. So the batter they use to make the fish fillet has got some dairy in it, some milk or cream or something. Now, in the course of doing the research, I found this Tablet K company is controversial. I'll tell you what the controversy was, because you might see it too. It's amazing how just a little bit of a bad reputation will ripple through that community. When you go on the blogs, the weblogs, you find people saying, yeah, I heard bad things about Tablet K. Well, here's what happened is they sell some cheeses, and the rennets they are using are made by Gentiles who are not supervised. And for that reason, they got a bad reputation on cheeses. Okay. It doesn't affect this stuff, but it's amazing how these things... This whole community of kosher observant people, they're doing all this work for us. All we have to do is reach in and pull out what we need. So for what they're selling here, I'll trust the Tablet K company. There's a kosher symbol on a can of baby corn on the cob. Here there's no kosher symbol, but the ingredient list is okay. Prepared chickpeas, salt, calcium chloride, a firming agent, disodium EDTA, promotes color retention. Now you can make an argument that those chemicals are not good for me. I'm all ears. I want to hear that. Maybe I need a pep talk. I respond to encouragement. But in terms of clean and unclean, There's nothing unclean in there. We have a lot of these yummy crackers here, these sesame-like multigrain crackers. In the lower left-hand corner, you'll see an OUD. I really like these. Circle K kosher on a symbol on a bottle of mayonnaise. I thought there was some dairy in mayonnaise. If there was, there'd be a D there. So that was a bit of a surprise. Maybe it's Miracle Whip that has dairy in it. I don't know. This is one of the highest rated symbols you could find, a Chicago Rabbinical Council symbol. I'm not saying this because I'm from Chicago, okay? But we have a beloved brother in the Messianic Jewish community. He's one of these rare fellows who uses the holy name in worship. And He's the one who told me this is one of the highest and most trustworthy certification agencies out there. CRC, the letter CRC in a triangle, and the R is real big in the middle. It was real hard to, it's funny because usually I have no trouble finding stuff labeled CRC. But in putting this material together, I had nothing at home, nothing around here. So I grabbed some from the internet. And now you know what the symbol looks like, a little triangles usually on the corner somewhere on the label. Here's one that you don't see right away in the upper left-hand corner. It's hiding in the wrinkle of the bag. That's a great one. Okay, let's run down some pertinent points here, because we're coming to the end here. Kosher symbols are usually reliable, but not always. Weblogs or blogs give evidence of controversy. Many, if most, controversies surround the employment of Gentiles who work under little or no rabbinic supervision. A simple case symbol has no standing among the Jews. It is a self-certification. We'll have more on that in a moment. Now, I'm going to read off a web link because some people only get an audio outreach. So if you're listening on audio outreach, you probably, too, have the ability to go back and listen to it a few times. But this link is from the Chicago Rabbinical Council webpage, http://www.crcweb.org/kosher. Articles. I'm not sure there if it should be kosher space articles or kosher underscore articles. I think it's underscore. I'm going to back up. crc.web.org/kosher_articles/reliability_of_agencies.php. Now, if you want to look for it another way, look for... your search tool, type in understanding the reliability of kosher agencies. There's fierce competition among them, some rivalries, and various levels of intensity and what they endorse. I just want to mention kosher for Passover speaks to the suitability for Pesach. You can buy something that's, how can I say it, they go beyond what we need. I'm just happy that it's kosher. And but when it says kosher for Passover, that doesn't mean it has failed in every other category. I'll talk about that useless K on the Jell-O box. Utterly useless. Totally useless. It's a self-certification. You can find rabbis out there who will say, oh, that gelatin's okay. Yeah, it came from a pig. But it's been processed so many times and in so many ways, it's not a pig anymore. And that's the basis for people like Jell-O and others saying, we use kosher gelatin. Well, they just got some rabbi to give them the go-ahead on this. I'm telling you right now, gelatin is a bunch of shark-infested waters. I remember in the Chicago Fellowship when we were scandalized, I'll go back maybe two decades, two and a half, how scandalized we were that we were using marshmallows with certified kosher gelatin, and a scandal broke out that the people certifying it had cheated. You got to be really careful with this gelatin. To me, the K symbol means, if I read the label, it'll probably be okay. But the K symbol has absolutely no value at all when it comes to gelatin products. Do not believe anything like kosher gelatin or that useless K on the Jell-O box. Their K is a self-certifying declaration by the food manufacturer. They can get away with using porky sources because they found rabbis out there who say it's kosher if it is cooked sufficiently. Know the source of the gelatin before taking the plunge. Kosher marshmallows, like the ones we had in the pantry back there, with gelatin, usually use fish gelatin. Bingo. Fish gelatin. That locks it in. Other points of interest. Look out for red carmine coloring. This evil comes in two names. Carmine is the name of the acid in the body of the bug they use to do the coloring. Carmine coloring comes from ground-up red bugs called cochineal. You know, I have reason to believe a lot of people are going to come running to me for a copy of these slides. I just have this hunch this is going to happen. Next item, natural flavors is looking risky too. Watch out for a natural flavor called castoreum. All right? It's a secretion from the anus of a beaver. All right, but I'm not making this up. Look it up. A natural flavor, you do some digging, you find, oh, it's castoreum. Like, oh my gosh, I don't want to eat that. Here's another one. I think a lot of the brethren are ahead of me on this. I think a number of the brotherhood have become faithful in this area before I did. There's a dough conditioner. It's an amino acid called L-cysteine. It is said to come from the hair of unclean sources. Only diligent inquiry will get to the bottom of this. So you got to be careful. I've heard everything. Horse hairs, human hairs, other things. So the question is, are you so, you want that yummy thing so bad that you will eat it even if it's got this stuff in it? Is that a lot of changes? Yeah. But remember, Brother Mike's thinking in terms of things getting better with each generation. By the time Yahshua has come, we've got a lot of things sorted out. Remember what the slide I showed you of the foods that are definitely kosher? It's stuff that Yahweh makes. No questions asked. You know, when I go to that salad bar over there at mealtime, I don't have to read no labels. You know, I know Yahweh made it. Let's have a word on cheese. We really are coming to the end here. The world has gone cheese crazy. I've ordered stuff, and I've said no cheese, and they still give me cheese on it. Well, I like cheese, but only on certain things. The history of cheese-curdling agents has been checkered. These enzymes have often come from objectionable sources, such as pig stomach. Now, when you got to the late 1980s and beyond, manufacturers stopped using pork-based enzymes, and they went to vegetable-derived enzymes or else beef-derived enzymes. But with the China initiative and globalization, now you don't know where the stuff is coming from. And they just as soon lie to you. I mean, really, now, how many of you have confidence in communist China telling you the truth? How many of you say, oh, yeah, I'm with them, you know? Many cheese manufacturers will allay your fears if you write to them. My kid's sister, when she got baptized, she found out about the rennet and cheese can sometimes come from objectionable sources. She wrote to all of them. And the one that was the best at the time was Sargento. I hope they're still on board. But in addition to sending her formal letters clarifying that the rennet sources were good, they gave her a lot of coupons, and you might get coupons too if you contact them, not on the phone, not on the internet, but by letter. You know. Oh, good, this got in there. Okay, good. I was afraid this we'd miss this. Cabot cheese is a real good product. I put an image of the backside on there. It says ingredients: fresh pasteurized milk, cheese cultures, salt, enzymes. Okay, where does the enzyme come from? It, quote, says, contains no animal rennet. Yippee. I don't need a kosher symbol, but no animal rennet, so that cheese is good. When I eat cheesy things here, I'm trusting those of you who cooked it to be faithful and scope these things out. There may be a kosher symbol on one cheese, but I'm not going to say the name here because it sounds like a cuss word, believe it or not. There's a product out there that sounds like a cuss word, but they happen to have a kosher symbol on it. Oh, a word on soaps. I only use laundry detergents that have the OU on them. You see, Tide. I had to really look on this image for the OU symbol, but there it is nestled under the letter T in the corner. And there's similar labels on dish soaps. Usually with soaps, it's going to be an OU. Kirk's Castile coconut soap doesn't have a symbol, but we know it's all vegetable. Looking ahead, let us gather knowledge about this. Perhaps a workshop is in order. Let us also come up with strategies to get our foods more directly from Yahweh. See, he doesn't have to put a kosher symbol on his stuff. He doesn't have to have a Jewish rabbi come in and do supervision. You can download a jumbo list of kosher agencies and symbols from this webpage. I'm going to give it to you now for those on the audio outreach, www.crcweb.org/agencies.pdf. So even though the Chicago Rabbinical Council is an agency of their own, they were magnanimous enough to publish a list of all that they knew about. I'm going to close with some images from that giant list of the kosher symbols. There's a big, long list, but I'm just going to give you a taste of what that's like. Now, on this slide, we had two of them that I discussed, the Rabbinical Council of California and Kosher Supervision of America. Here are some you've never seen in your entire life. I haven't, but they're out there. Now, here's another page. There's only one here that I recognize, the Chicago Rabbinical Council. Pages and pages of this are out there. I'll be happy to give a PDF of these notes to anybody who asks me for them. I'll give it to you by email. I'll put it on your thumb drive. Printing it out might be a hardship because I had a lot of images here of products, and a lot of those are color intensive, and they'll use up an ink real bad. But if you want an electronic version, I can arrange for that. So for others, this is another area of faithfulness I'd like us to get good at. I think the ultimate answer is to get as close as we can to Yahweh's food. I'm going to close with a scripture I meant to bring up earlier. I was convicted earlier to make mention of this. I hope I can find it. Here it is. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5. When you hear it, you'll know you've heard it before. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of Elohim, and bringeth into captivity every thought to the obedience of Messiah. Bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Messiah. One of the wise brethren among us said this morning, if we don't get our thoughts captive, our thoughts are going to take us captive. And if your lust for the food of certain foods is so high, you're eating unclean, then those thoughts will have to be taken captive, just like every other thought that's contrary to the spirit of truth. Okay, I'm going to relinquish now control to the moderator. Thank you all.